Now let's talk to an expert. Michelle Belko is a lecturer at the University of Houston, where she studies the use of executive orders by presidents. And she joins me on the line from Berkeley, California. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. So was everything basically correct?
Yep. It sure was. Executive orders are interesting things, and proclamations as well, and presidents act using lots of different types of executive actions.
Well, then let's dig into some of the questions that have arisen in recent years. And the first one is overstepping. This question, and this came up obviously quite recently with two of Trump's executive orders. At what point do we know where that line is, where an executive order can sort of overstep his constitutional authority?
Well, it's a very interesting question because overstepping can be an overreach of the authority that the president exercises, be it constitutional or be it statutory or under implied powers.
What's the difference between constitutional and statutory?
Well, constitutional powers would be the commander-in-chief power. And it would be other executive power that the president relies on under the Constitution. Statutory power is power delegated by Congress for the president to act. So in most laws, since Congress can't carry out the law themselves, then delegates to the president and or the executive branch the authority to act and generally gives them an outline of what they're supposed to do.
Now, this comes up quite often, certainly in the past decade or so, in terms of whether a president is making law or interpreting law. And what have the courts told us about this particular line?
Well, it's an unsettled question, really, because presidents can go fairly far using discretion to interpret what the laws that Congress passes. The question is making law, setting new policy that is outside the bounds of what Congress intended, which is what the prior Congress under President Obama charged him with doing. So that's really the question is when they're operating under their statutory authority. If it's a declaration of a national emergency or it's a crisis of some kind, then typically we're not going to consider the president acting outside his bounds. It's when he takes a law and interprets it differently, more broadly than Congress possibly intended. And the difference is also whether it's the Congress that enacted the law or the Congress that is simply charged with enforcing the law at that time.
Tell me of an instance when an executive order was struck down.
Struck down, meaning permanently struck down. I think your good example was the Truman's steel seizure,
uh-huh.
When he tried to seize the steel mills rather than relying on the statutory authority that he had. He did rely on his constitutional authority, and the court said, if we look at it in order of importance, statutory comes first, and it's kind of clouded even under your constitutional authority. And when you take private property, it's really weak, so you better find some other basis for your authority than just relying on the commander-in-chief power.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with University of Houston lecturer Michelle Belko. We're talking about the use of presidential executive orders. That has been a highlight of Donald Trump's presidency since he took office. And that brings us back to, during President Obama's terms, there was a lot of criticism of legislating through executive order. And it's now actually something that Donald Trump sees as a sign of his productivity. So do we have any kind of historical context for which one is correct? Is overuse of executive order a sign that someone is a despot?
Well, typically, there are we can consider two paths, right, that presidents take. One is using executive power when they're unable to pass legislation, right? And then certainly in other instances, they're using executive power to sort of move policy along, to tell the executive branch what to do in order to anticipate the need for legislation. So setting the groundwork, having the agencies determine, is legislation needed? What's, you know, taking an inventory of what the current policy is and evaluating things.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but it sounds as though our two most recent presidents are good examples of both of those types, right?
I would say yes. Yes.
President Obama did not have control of Congress, so he used executive action because he was stymied in legislation. President Trump has, his party has control of both the House and the Senate, and so these are supposed to be guidelines. Is that what you're saying, that these are guidelines?
I'm saying that I think he's revisiting policy. Revisiting the changes that have been made to policy so that they can determine the direction that this new administration would like policy to go.
So when you are doing that, when you are showing the direction that policy goes, does legislation usually follow an executive order?
It does, usually, yes. Traditionally, the answer is yes.
Okay, so, and many people have talked a lot about how many executive orders Obama signed and how many Trump, but many presidents have used executive orders pretty liberally, have they not?
They have. Mm-hmm. Not many, but yes, a good number.
Mm-hmm. So when we say not many, since they began keeping track of executive orders in the Federal Register, what's the average? I mean, how many orders does a president usually sign?
I would say it's usually about 75 a year, maybe between 60 and 75. It depends. A lot of executive orders are not policy-based. A lot of them are simply mandatory, something that the president must carry out. And he uses the executive order as a tool. Sometimes he's delegating authority to other members of the executive branch, telling the Department of Commerce, this is what you need to do, Secretary of Treasury, this is what you need to do, and, you know, clarifying the different roles, especially when new legislation has been recently enacted, then the president needs to tell the executive branch in a formal way, this is what your assignment is under the reauthorization of a law or the creation of a new law or an amendment to a law.
So if these executive orders are basically the president speaking to others in government and saying, here's what I need you to do, how does that usually trickle down then to citizens?
It can trickle down in lots of different ways. If it is, if it's something that's going to be translated into policy, as you were talking about before, the interpretation of law, it trickles down significantly because it's the policy that we live by, the rules and regulations that the executive branch, the agencies themselves that are targeted with carrying things out, that's the rules and regulations that we follow. An executive order can affect an executive order determining trade or environmental issues can have a direct effect on citizens. So they can, because the executive branch governs so much of what affects our daily lives.
So, I mean, do you feel you have a better understanding of President Trump and his, I guess, priorities because of his executive orders?
I would think that we can look at the executive orders that he issued and think about what his direction is or what he's anticipating the direction will be for energy, opening up new avenues of energy exploration, reconsidering public lands, and just revisiting, as I said, the statutory authority under which President Obama acted, and really, where does that stand with regard to the policy that the agencies are carrying out at this point? Because it's a new administration.
And executive orders can completely overturn whatever executive orders were signed by the previous president.
They can,
yeah.
Right. A little more challenging to overturn the actual rules and regulations unless they were recently enacted, and
right.
Then we have the Congressional Review Act.
Mm-hmm. That is University of Houston lecturer Michelle Belko, and we've been talking about the use of executive orders by U.S. presidents. Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.